Alrighty. And our speaker for tonight is Bob F. from Orchid.
All right. Bob alcoholic. You know, wow. You know, I'm like to say I'm sober today by my loving God and principles and steps and you know, the fellowship I see here tonight, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, for that I'm forever grateful. You know, and love talking about Bob, so thank you for asking me to talk about it. It's amazing, they tell you when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, God first, others second, me last. Mm-hmm. Then you come in here and you ask me to talk for 45, or I can go an hour if I'd like. So, you know, I'm grateful today. You know, I'd like to say welcome to the newcomer. It's good to see you, Matt. God bless you. And the Chips, Keith, 90 days. Terry, 9 months. And Arlene, 23 years. Congratulations. You know, birthdays, I just love them. You know, and I'd like to say a shout out to my my sponsor, Victor, and his wife, Kathy. Thank you, you know. And nothing could be complete in my recovery, not only with sponsors, but sponsees too as well. And I see Brian and Daniel and Nate. And Jesse, you know, Daniel's always busting my chops, asking me who the favorite is, you know. He goes, it's Nate, isn't it? But Jesse and I know better. You know, and I'll tell you what, if my wife isn't here tonight, she had to stay, and she went to Sanger to take care of her dad. And I gave her a bad time on Thursday night. I felt a little bit bad for like a second, you know, and got into a little bit of self-pity. And then I said, okay, you're gone. Well, then I'm going to talk about you then. But I'm not going to tonight. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I started drinking when I was 22. And I crossed that line when I was 24. And I came in AA when I was 29. You know, and I turned 58 last week. So I've spent just about half my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I'm forever grateful. You know, I also welcome our Al-Anons. You know, I see some old-timers. I see some newcomers. You know, and I see trouble for our alcoholics. So anyway, God bless you, Al-Anons. You know, I grew up in a time when it was yes, mom, no, mom. You did what you're told. You know, in the 70s. And one of the things about my dad, he lost his dad when he was 10. And so he grew up in a time in the 40s and 50s where, you know, he became the man of the house, taking care of my grandmother and his younger brother. So, you know, us growing up, I won't say I was spoiled, but I was thinking, well, yeah, I was spoiled. You know, I was spoiled. You know, he provided for us. We didn't have growing up himself. Strong work ethic that he put into us. Strong work ethic. Always telling me I'm responsible for my actions. You know, and one of the things about growing up in the 70s is at 15 and a half, you're expected to get a job. If you want to drive the family car, you want to have things, you had to go out and get a job. You know, and in high school, you go and you get your work permit, and that's what you did. You know, and my first job was at Burger King. You know, hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders, don't set us. That's what I did. You know, I can remember a Whopper order like there's no tomorrow. I can make Whoppers quicker than quick, you know? You know, today ask me what's on page 20 of the big book. No dice. You know, and one of the things about me growing up in high school, I was that guy you see off in the corner. And I say this for identification purposes, not to feel sorry for me or anything, but I was that guy. I love physics. I love chemistry. I like calculus. I like those things. I hung off in a group. You know, those three guys, that's how it was, complexions, all that thing going on. And I never participated in any social functions. I just didn't know how. I was just not social. I was just, the social skills were just not there. You know, it just weren't there. And I heard that last night. Somebody shared last night at the podium meeting and I identified with that. You know, that's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But one of the things about me is I'm a people pleaser. I want people to like me. You know, you know, if you're, You can be behind a door, and I think you're talking about me. What I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not my business what you're thinking about me. But there was a guy there at Burger King, and we finished up high school and went over to college, and he wanted to rush a fraternity. And I told him, yes, I'd do that. You know, for any of you that don't know about the fraternal system, you go down during rest week, Monday through Friday, you go into these fraternities, and each fraternity has 40 to 70 guys in there. And their job during the rest week, when you go through, is to get them to like you to want to join their house. That's not me. Definitely not me. But because I wanted to have a friend that liked me, I decided to go ahead and go. You know, that first night there, I walked in this house, and you see these sorority sisters. You see the guys in ties, you know, all prepped out. Just not me. I'm wearing the wrong clothes. I don't fit in. You know, this isn't for me. But I noticed something over there in the corner. It's called a jockey box. Now, if I don't know if any of you know what a jockey box is, but it got coils inside this little igloo. It's got ice. It's got crushed ice. It's got a CO2 tank on it. You know, it runs into the, taps into the keg and comes down. And I just, it's kind of cool the way that you dropped that tap down, a little bit of foam with beer. You know, and I went over there and had a couple beers. Nothing big. Didn't have a spiritual awakening. You know, my teeth didn't chatter, none of that. You know, just didn't do any of that. You know, and I could still remember my dad telling me, you're responsible for your actions. So I drove home that night. But I'll tell you what, by the end of the week, on Thursday, you know, I realized I had a good capacity to be able to drink some beer. And by the end of the Thursday, I was drinking 6 beers. I mean, that might not seem a lot to you, but I was trying to control it. I didn't want to get over the top. But by the end of the, on Thursday, I went to the best fraternity on Fraternity Row, and I said, you know what? You guys don't know who I am. Don't you know who I am? You know, and I was able to talk to them. I was able to socialize, able to dance. I'd be able to do all those things that I never could do, you know, sober. I found that magic elixir. You know, I became that person I always wanted to be. You know, and I could sell ice to an Eskimo. You know, I was Bucktooth Billy BS. You know, I could throw it down good. But one of the things I am as a practicing alcoholic is I'm a fast starter and a lousy finisher. You know, I start really good, and you want me. You know, I could bring you into my little my orbit. You're going to trust me. You're going to like me, and then I'm going to burn you. That's what I do as an alcoholic. You know, after 3 years of being in that fraternity, they were happy to see me go. You know, they're happy to see me go. And just a little bit about how bad it got for me. You know, that obsession of mine, physiology of the body, kicked in really good. I spent one semester pretending I was in school because I got the boot. So I'm driving over to the library with magazines in my backpack, pretending I'm going to school. I spent 4 hours in the library every day for a whole semester pretending I was in school. You know the kind of work that took? It was incredible. You know, back then there's no internet. You can't Google. You have to actually read something. So I spent 4 hours every day reading a book just because I was being dishonest and lying and cheating. You know, all those things there. But they're happy to see me go. So I did the next best thing I could do as an alcoholic. I took a geographic, you know, decided to be all you can be. I landed in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, field artillery, you know, shoot, move, and communicate. You know, here I am, this guy from California. I'm right in the middle of snow, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, cold as cold, getting my head shaved, running, doing all kinds, you know, just going through basic training. Once again, fast starter, and I was able to just maintain my drinking when I was in basic training EIT. And a matter of fact, I got letters of recommendation to my new unit. And I landed in Fort Ord, Monterey, close to Fresno. You know, and after 18 months, they put me in front of the sergeant board, E4. I was E4. What you do here in field artillery, I was in field artillery again, is they put you in front of the command sergeant major. You have first sergeants on this side, first sergeants on this side from the battery. I was in field artillery, so each one of them had a representative there. And you go in there and you stand up straight, military posture, military bearing, you know, and you just show them what you're made of, basically. And, you know, they tell you, get out, come back in, and we'll tell you our decision. You know, I was sitting there, and I came back in, stood there, and the command sergeant major said, congratulations, you're E4 promotable. You know, once the scores come down, you get your stripes. You know, so I did what I always do well. I decided that night to go out for the Salinas and go on a run. And I drank, and I drank, and I drank, and I got caught up in what I like to call extracurricular activities. You know, that white powder during the 80s. You know, I came back on that Monday, and they had a urine test, and I got popped. You know, and a couple weeks later, I'm in front of the lieutenant colonel, the major, captain, all my peers, and I'm E0. They took everything away from me, you know. And what they do in the military when that happens is they you get an extra duty, you know, and you're looked down upon. You know, and what I did, my day would start at 4:30 in the morning and would end at midnight. And I'd do extra duty. I'd sit there and I'd mow the lawn down the mall in front of the chain, in front of the command, and everybody would look at you. You know, and there was a reason for that. And the amount of remorse and the shame that I had was just, I did the next best thing. I'll just drown it in alcohol. So I'd go out and party from midnight all the way to 3 and go to work drunk. That's what I did. And once again, fast starter, lousy finisher, and I made it out of, got an honorable discharge by the skin of my BDUs, you know. And I landed out back in Fresno. I decided to try to go back to college again, but they weren't going to have, they allowed me to enroll. I took my GI Bill money, but decided not to go to school. You know, took the money and ran. And that's what I did. You know, I landed in the little house that I was renting in Fresno and Gettysburg, a little house there. And, you know, my drinking had progressed so bad that my family didn't want me around anymore. Matter of fact, let me just step back from that. I ostracized myself from my family. Because as a practicing alcoholic, what I do is I grab my family and I bring them in. And I take them through all the torment that I do as a practicing alcoholic. You know, they learn to trust me, and I burn that trust. I take money. I do all those things, lie, cheat, and steal. And you know what, Bobby, you got to do what you got to do. And that's basically what happened there, too. As far as any friends, I didn't have any friends. You know, the friends that I had at the time were friends only if I was holding. You know, and they got tired of me, too, as well. I had no money. You know, and they got tired of me partying with them, too. They said, you know, Bob, we don't want you around anymore. You know, I was off on the west side of Fresno doing all kinds of stuff that I shouldn't been doing. You know, and so we don't want you around anymore because when you come and you party with us, you look underneath the door, you look behind the curtains, and you play that peekaboo. You know, you mess up our bus, so just stay away. Stay away. You know, and I had no God in my life. You know, the God I had in my life was like, please get me out of another one. Please get me out of these handcuffs. Please get me out of jail. You know, and I didn't have... God wasn't there. Just didn't know how. You know, and to work, as far as work various temporary agencies, fast starter, lousy finisher. I'd work a couple weeks, grab that paycheck, and I was off to the races. And they'd want to hire me. They'd try to call me up. So I'd go to another temporary agency, another one. I'd do round robin for about a year. And the drinking got so bad. You know, I had, and this is the thing about me as a practicing alcoholic, I'd have this little room and my full-size bed could fit in there. And I'd fold up all my clothes around the side of the bed, and I'd iron up the shirts. Because just in case you came over, I wanted you guys to see how good I looked. But I'm dying in the inside. It's that persona, that perception that I wanted you guys to think that, you know, I'm just good. I'm doing fine. You know, and my roommates decided to take off one weekend, or they had something planned. And I had come to the end of my road. One of the biggest fears I had when I was drinking was that I couldn't sleep at night. I had this fear of not being able to sleep. So I would drink, and I would drink until I'd pass out, and that wasn't working anymore. You know, everything was caving in on me. It was just coming in on me, and I couldn't take it anymore. So I decided I was going to go ahead and kill myself by drinking. So I went down to Thrifty Drugs, and I picked me up some Thrifty Gin, some of that good beer, that Meisterbrau, and some King Cobra, and decided let's go for it. So I sat down on that beanbag chair and I just threw it down. And I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank. And I tried to take myself out. Just lay there. You know, it just wasn't working. And I drank some more and I'm laying down there and I look up and there's this man. He's coming right through the doorway. And he comes and he picks me up off that beanbag chair. You know, and he takes me down the driveway. And if any of you walked a drunk before, you do that two-step, you know, and he walked me down the driveway and he put me into his truck. You know, he lowered my head down so I wouldn't bang my head. He put the seatbelt on me. You know, I realized I didn't have handcuffs on, so I wasn't being arrested, you know. But one thing that stands out to me to this various day is those kind eyes. You know, he told me everything was going to be okay. You know, and he got me into the hospital. There in Fresno, St. Agnes Hospital, and he checked me in, and I thought to myself, how could he do this? He's not a family friend, and he's not family. How does this work? And I ended up in my second psychiatric ward, probably my third, but my in the psychiatric ward there. And I woke up a couple days later, you know, I was in and out, just detoxing. You know, and what woke me up is I heard my parents outside the door there in the hospital. And I remember my dad saying, you know what, doctor, we're not paying for this anymore. We can't do this anymore. He's on his own. And my mom and dad came walking down the hallway, and my mom popped her head in and said, you know, mijo, why do you do this to yourself? You know, and I sat down, I laid down in that bed, and I thought, you know, God, I cannot do this anymore. You know, and at that time, I believed to myself, I conceded in my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, that I couldn't live like this anymore. And I was just tore up inside and asked God for another chance. So the doctor comes in later on that day, and he says, we're going to have to release you. You have no health insurance. And I said, okay. He says, but I might have a plan. And he came back in later that evening, and he discharged me, and he said, you know, we have a bed available at the VA hospital on Wednesday. This is being a Sunday. And if you can stay sober until Wednesday at check-in at 10 o'clock, he can have that bed. He says, do you think you can stay sober? And I said, yes, I think I can. And he says, another suggestion, I suggest you go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Can you do that? And I said, I think I can too. So I called up my friend. You know, you always have that one last friend in that beat up car, he could pick you up, you know, and take you in. And I called him up, and he picked me up, and he took me to his house. You know, and I called up the AA hotline there in Fresno. And any of you that have that commitment of answering phone calls to direct people to the meetings, you saved an alcoholic that day. He took care of me. And so my first meeting there in Fresno was the Alana Club, going through the back door there. I got dropped off. And what happened to me there is I got greeted. Hector V. That's who he is. You know, he's 33 years of sobriety now. And he opened up that folding chair and he sat me down. And he told me everything was going to be okay too as well. You know, and he poured me a cup of coffee. You know, he showed me where the bathrooms are. You know, and I always say this, and it was a cake meeting. You know, they had cake, and I love cake. And Doc Bernstein's, and Blaze Peace. Anyway, I just loved all these things. You know, I'm an alcoholic. That's what I am. And I look up on the walls, and I see the same things that we have right here. Halt, hungry and angry and tired. You know, surrender to the wind. First things first. One day at a time. Live and let live. You know, and I just think, which I know didn't apply to me, you know. Does not apply to me, and some of us too as well. And, you know, he was smoky in that room, just smoky as heck. You know, I hate smoke. Back then, it's smoke. Oh, and I could barely see the statements on the wall with the numbers and the writings, and I was like, what is that? My God, I joined a cult. You know, and I was confused, you know, and that's how it worked for me. And he took me to meetings the next day, and I got into the VA hospital, did the 28-day program. And what I found is the 28-day program was a bridge to Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous is the bridge to God. And that's what I came to find out. You know, after I got out of the 28-day program, I went back and started living at that little house there. And I was living off bus tokens, Social Security, meal tickets from the VA hospital, because that's what they gave you. That's how I lived. And I would take the bus all over Fresno and go to meetings, you know, two meetings a day. And, you know, I told my sponsor, had a sponsor at the time, and I said, you know what, the bus stops running at 8 o'clock at night. What do I do? He says, well, you go ask another member of Alcoholics Anonymous for a ride. Oh, I can't do that. You know, oh, geez. But it was one of the best things he suggested to me. So I'd go into a meeting, I'd scan the room and figure out which one of you guys had a car. You know, and then I'd go up and ask you for a ride. If you didn't have a ride, somebody else had a ride. You know, and you'd give me a ride home. And, you know, depending on the length of your sobriety, that's the length of the speaker beat I'd get on the way home, because you wanted to tell everything to a guy with 45 days of sobriety. But that's what I did. And I was also suggested I get phone numbers. There's no phone list. You go get the phone numbers. Because my sponsor realized that he knew that I was this introvert. And for me to go ask for your phone number, I had to step out of self. You know, those were the suggestions that got me going into Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that could be a part of. You know, and that's what I did. You know, and 65 days I was sober, I was home. sitting on that beanbag chair, and I got a call. And the other man on the phone was very professional, and he said, "You know what, are you Robert G. Felix Jr. 57235? And I said, "Yes, I am." He says, "You've been activated to participate in Desert Shield." Mm. You know, and I thought, oh my God. Mm-hmm. You know, because you hear all the gas and all that, and I'm thinking, I got 65 days of sobriety. You know, so I did what I did. I called my sponsor, let him know what I was doing. Back then, there's no texts. You just leave a message, and maybe he'll get to it at the end of his day. And then there's no contact. You got to find each other. I called my mom up and let her know that I was going, what was going on. That was a report to the Armory at 0600 hours the next day. And please tell Dad, because Dad and I, we had a tough relationship. But I wanted the message to be relayed to him. So I go over to the Armory. And I show up and I see my section chief, and I tell him, you know what, he asked me how I'm doing. I said, I'm doing okay, but I have this book, right here. And it has God in it. At the time, we were told that the Saudis didn't want us to take anything with God over to the Gulf. And I knew that I needed to take this book with me. And he said, you need to go see the chaplain. So I'm in a headquarters detachment unit, and with that, that means you don't have a chaplain assigned. When you get activated, they attach the chaplain to you, and he can be from any place in the United States. So I go up and I meet this chaplain. So I walk upstairs and I introduce myself. And he says, "What can I do for you?" And I said, "Well, you know, sir, we have this book I need to take with me. It's and I go to these AA meetings, you know, and I was told we can't take anything with God overseas with us." And he just smiled, and I should have known, you know, like those old timers are. You know, these old timers wait, and they let you say, and then they wait for you to stop, and then they give you a suggestion. And that's what he did. He says, "Don't worry about it. I'm taking my big book." You know, see, Major Bob had 22 years of sobriety. 22 years. And I realized, you know what, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, I came down those stairs, and I was just floating on air, and I realized, you know, I came to believe the power greater than myself can restore insanity. You know, and that was just the little spot that I needed. You know, we palmed, prepared for overseas movement, and I did it out of Fort Ord. And I went, and my old unit found out I was deploying. And they came over, and they were a complete support. Because this is a guy that left that unit by the skin of his BDUs. You know, I got overseas, and I was scared. To be honest with you, I was scared. You know, how am I going to maintain my sobriety, my peace of mind in the desert? It's 130 degrees out there. You know, and things are going on. I'm in advanced detachment, so I'm always out ahead of the company. And Major Bob is behind. And he'd follow up within 2 weeks of me. But during that time, I was reading the big book, you know, under a punch liner with the red flashlight. You know, that's what I did. You told me to read the big book. You told me to read the stories in the back of the book, because that was my bridge to be closer to you back here in the States. 12 by 12 even talks about that, that there are men and women and men that went over in World War II and maintained their sobriety more than the members did back at home. And I had a belief in that, you know. And two weeks would go by, and I see Major Bob, the company, would follow up. And then the guys would chide me and say, "Hey, the Major's looking for you." You know, I look across the desert, and he's crocking that finger. He says, "We're going to have a meeting." He didn't ask if I wanted to have one. He said, "We're going to have one." You know, we went in the tent, and we shared, and we talked about, read the traditions, read the steps. We went through the big book, and we shared, and we talked. We realized one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. You know, that's what we did. And at that time, I made a decision to turn my will, my life, over the care of God as we understood him. Because here was another man going through the same thing I was and staying sober. So why couldn't I do that? You know, and that inspired me so much, motivated me to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, just the two of us. You know, and I came home, 10 months sober, attended my first meeting back home at the Lano Club in Fresno. I just went there because that's what you told me to do. So I showed up at the first meeting of the Lano Club there. My home group in the valley is 11 o'clock step study meeting from 11 to 12:30. My home group here in Orcutt is a men's stag on Thursday nights. You know, and I show up there, and you guys all greeted me, and you welcomed me home. You know, and I looked across the room, and I saw a young lady. And that was July 7th, 1991, and that was my wife. You know, we've been married, 22 years next month. You know, one day at a time. Sure, we've had our ups and downs. You know, I've had to rely on that other program, the courage to change. You know, I needed that. You know, we separated for a little bit because she had to get well. You know, but God has a way of working things out. You know, and one of the things that was pushed on me so much, and I thank God for it, and I hear that in our fellowship here, was service. You know, I immediately got into service. At the VA hospital. I was blessed to be able to be a member of be able to go to the VA hospital and do service work. You know, I was able to work at the detox. You know, I was doing service work 3 times a week and driving the druggy buggy every Friday and Saturday night, taking guys out to meetings. You know, I was committed to service. You know, one of the things, too, is I was secretary of the Wednesday night meeting at the VA hospital. And one of the things about being a secretary for a speaker meeting, you become a speaker seeker. And in Fresno, you get to go around to all the different fellowships. And what happens is you get to know that speaker, and you get to know his little fellowship that he brings over. And my Rolodex expanded. Well, we have contact lists today, but your Rolodex. Back in the day, it's... Anyway, see me after the meeting, and I'll explain to you what that is. And it expanded. And I got to know more alcoholics. I was in service. You know, and I tell you what, service saved my rear. Because I was in a new relationship, trying to stay sober, or working to stay sober, and every time my head would start running, that chattering monkey, you know, I'd run over to the VA hospital, work detox, make some beds, and I'm good to go, and I'm out the door. You know, and I got involved with my steps, with my sponsor. Oh, the fourth step just about rang my bell, because I'm a perfectionist. You know, and being a perfectionist, I set myself up to fail. You know, and somebody laid out the fourth step easy for me, and I did it. I did it. And I struggled so much. This old timer came up to me and he says, "What's wrong, Bob?" I said, "I'm doing my fourth step and it's not perfect." He laughed and he said, "Grab your sponsor, go do your fifth." And I'm so glad I did. For any of you working on your fourth step, do the work. And you know what? In that fifth step, it made me so much closer to you. When I went to my first AA meeting, I felt a part of you. You know, we had that closeness, that brotherhood. You know, the almighty fifth step too as well. So I'm doing step work. I'm doing service. You know, life is one of the members in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the old timers said, "What are you going to do now for your life? You're doing service. You're doing step work. You're doing fellowship. You know, meeting makers make it. You know, I'm doing the deal." And he says, "You need to do something with your life." And so I decided to go back to school. Fresno State wouldn't have me, so I decided to go to the junior college. You know, and I'm thinking, how dare they? I should be at the state university, not the junior college. You know, that's that ego. And I enrolled in college there. I enrolled in Fresno City. Always wanted to be an engineer. You know, and I spent the next 2 years at Fresno City College, and I got my degree in architecture, and a science degree there, too. You know, one of the things that I wanted to do when I came back is I wanted to know who that guy was that came and 12-stepped me. You know, and I kind of put two and two together during as the time I was passing out, blacking out. And I realized I called a church right next to the Burger King I used to manage. So I called that church and I said, "You know what? I called you up about a year and 2 months ago. I wanted to kill myself and I asked you for help." You know, the doctor had told me that before I had left. And so I called the church up. She says, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'll ask around. So I left my number and then I was living with my parents. When I came back from Saudi Arabia, my parents took me back in. They said, "Let us take care of you." And they did. You know, the family afterwards. You know, and my dad talked to me the next week. He says, "Hey, the church called. They want you to call them back." So I called the church back. And I come to find out that the man that happened to be at the church that day was pretty high up in the church. He just so happened to be in that parish. He wasn't supposed to be there that day. And he was able to take my call. He took my call. And he had 2 years of sobriety. And he just so happened to do a 12-step call on me. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And if any of you know what a parish is, and somebody high up, he's pretty high. You know, and from going around different meetings around Fresno during the time, I found out that there was, I kind of figured out where he would be. but I had to figure out what meeting he was going to go to, who he was going to. So I went into a meeting on a Monday night, and he came through the doors. And I saw him, and he looked at me, and he said, "My son, my son." You know, we went outside, and we talked for like 2 hours, and we had, I told him everything that had been happening to me. I told him I was 14 months sober. You know, and I'll never forget that, ever. You know, and Cindy and I, later on, when we got engaged and decided to get married, we asked him to marry us. And because he's in a different parish and we're in this parish, he pulled some strings so we could get married in his parish. You know, and if you come to our house, you'll see him. He's right there. And Cindy and I, right there. My brother Jeff, who I met doing volunteer work at the VA hospital, is right there. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. One of the other things that happened to me too, and I have to share this with you. I'm in Fresno City College and I get a call from command. They want me to report down to the armory. So I go down there and I'm thinking, well, they don't have anything on me. I'm all good. So I go down there and I meet with the lieutenant colonel and I meet with the major and I meet with the captain. And they said, we want you to submit your name. We want you to apply for officer candidate school. And I said, you don't know my history. Got a lot of bad stuff. They said, we know your history, but we still want you to apply. And I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I talked about an old timer said, put the paperwork in, do the deal. You know, leave the results up to God. That's what I've been told over and over. So I went back and I agreed, and I got some letters of recommendation from my sponsor, from the VA hospital, the counselors, from the dean at Fresno City College, from the command, and I submitted my paperwork for officer candidate school. And they submitted it for me. About 4 months later, I get a letter, and it said I'm to report in front of a board of officers. You know, and I go in front of this. I go ahead and I'm talking to Cindy. I said, "You want an engineer? Or you want an officer?" And we're laughing about it. And I go ahead and I go to the board, and I show up. And this time, there's not the command sergeant majors with the first sergeant. There's a major, captains, and lieutenants. And I do my military. They ask me the questions, and I do it. And they tell me to step out. And, but before I stepped out, let me just step back. They asked me, what has been the biggest challenge you've ever had in your life? Military, personal, anything. And I said, getting sober and staying sober. I let it out. I said, well, here you go, God. Let's see you work this one. So I stepped out of the room and I came back in and I didn't think I had a chance in heck. And that major reached over the desk and he says, congratulations, Officer Candidate Felix. You know, I was in Officer Candidate School. And that summer I left for Officer Candidate School. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. You know, and I was a smart aleck too as well. Because they tell you before you go to Officer Candidate School to remove all your patches off your uniforms, and some of you know there in the Army know about that, and I'm gonna leave that right patch on, show you what I've done. You know, I get off that bus and the officers are just on me. Look at this guy, he doesn't know how to follow directions. They're on me. They're ripping my patch off and I was getting bent. I said, that's okay, at least you can't take the chip out of my pocket. You know, I have my 1 year chip in there. You know, that's me, defiant. So I spent the next weeks, and I'm just, it's the way they do it. You get stressed out. They stress you out. You're stressed out. You know, without showers, just everything. You land nav during the night, just everything. And I'm looking forward for Sunday for the chapel. You know, you get the Sunday services, and I'm looking forward to that. So I'm in the chapel. I'm in there with other officer candidates, and we're in the chapel there. And I got my head down because I'm just tired. And I'm asking God, you know, please help me out. You've been with me every step, but please help me, God. And I have my head down. You know, and I hear the chapel doors open, and I hear this man walking down the middle of the pews, you know. And he says, is there Officer Candidate Felix in here? They'll allow anybody in here, won't they? Everybody points to me. And I look up, and there's Major Bob. And service was great. You know, and then afterwards, he met me outside the chapel. And he said, let's talk. We talked a little bit. He said, you haven't had a meeting in a while, have you? I said, nope. He says, well, I'll get one arranged for you. And I said, you know what, sir, don't do that, please, because I don't want command to know that I need to talk to the chaplain. He says, you don't worry about that. I'll take care of that. 3 days later, he had a meeting for me. We had a meeting together, just like we did in the desert. But this time we did it at Officer Candidate School. We had a meeting together. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, about the time I got accepted into Cal Poly, you know, and I had to make a decision. And I decided to be an engineer. And I went to school at Cal Poly, and I left Fresno. You know, and I got immediately into service there at the VA hospital, VA service center there at Cal Poly. Joined the Melody Group, got involved, got active in the Melody Group there in San Luis Obispo. Got to know them. You know, I remember calling my sponsor up, bragging about how the meetings are only an hour in San Luis Obispo. You know, by the time they do the false statute additions, it's 45 minutes left, and I was bragging. Up. In Fresno, the meetings are an hour and a half. Shouldn't have called him up. He said, then go to two meetings. So taught me to call him up. You know, and I was crying and whining because the guys were so much smarter than me. And see, I have to work hard for anything I do, even in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to put in the work. You know, and I called up, and he goes, oh, they're so smart here, everybody's so smart. And he said, go to more meetings. Go to more meetings. You know, it's amazing how much smarter you get when you go to more meetings. You know, and that's what I did. And I graduated. You know, got that engineering degree. The past 17 years, I worked on the road. I worked in construction management. My first job out in the field, out in the construction field, I was scared. Scared like, you know, because I'm green. And when you go out there, you know, it's a tough field. You know, and I get in the trailer and I meet the superintendent, and I didn't know who it was. And it just so happened to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous from the Melody Group. He had 3 years of sobriety. You know, somebody that I knew. And so he was with me for about the next 5 years as my mentor in construction management. You know, we'd go together on the road, and the way I did for 17 years is I would fly out or leave the house on Sundays and come back on Thursdays. So I was out in various states of Nevada, California, and Arizona. And what I learned is to take a meeting directory with you. You know, back then when we first started going out, they didn't have the iPhone, so we'd take a meeting directory with us. You know, and you'd find out where the meetings were at and you attend. You know, and I learned how to do that. I learned how to go and meet other AAs and other fellowships in different cities to become a part of. Because I was encouraged to go get my phone numbers and to shake hands myself, that whenever I got into a new fellowship, that's what I did. Extend my hand out and they would reciprocate it back. You know, and through this, because of the company that I worked for, they did a lot of military work. So I had access to bases, you know, the Marines, the Navy, the Army. And so I'd find where those meetings were at on those bases, in our posts, whatever branch I was going into. So I'd go to these meetings and I'd find a newcomer there, somebody who had just got popped, just like I had. And I would give them encouragement and give them hope and tell them everything's going to be okay, but you got to want to get sober, you know. And I learned that I can't carry the alcoholic. I can only share the message, you know. And I thank God for me being able to have that ability to go around and do that with around the different installations here. You know, Cindy and I, our marriage has been incredible. You know, there's nothing like two members in recovery. You know, we both have our own programs. We're both independent. You know, we have separation of church and state as far as program goes. We don't sponsor each other. That didn't work the first time around. I know better than that. I get myself hurt when I get myself too involved in somebody else's business. It's none of my business. You know, we learned to do that over the years. You know, what brings us close together is that we both have a loving God as He expresses Himself. And without loving God, we just, you know, we've had a really good marriage. I'm still working, though. I'm still a work in progress. You know, lately she wants to pray together in the mornings. I'm like, man, I already did my prayers. I'm good to go, you know. But I'm getting there. You know, one of the things, too, is that, you know, throughout my sobriety, throughout my time, I've had my major Bobs. I've had my Monsignors all throughout my sobriety here. And it's amazing what happens when I open up my mind and open up and I can see what God is, who, the people that God is putting inside in front of me. You know, and something happened to us. Cindy and I were living in Arizona. We had moved back here to Orchid about three years ago. And I came in on a Thursday night, you know, and she said she's going to go to a convention there at the for Alcoholics Anonymous at Arizona State Convention, I believe it was. That was in 2014. It was in September, and she was all excited. You know, she was going to go to this convention with the. I forget the name of the group that she was going with, and she asked me if I wanted to go. I said, no. I just got home. I've been working hard. You go ahead. You go. No, thank you. You know, I'll stay home. You go get your sobriety. You know, God. And so she goes, and, you know, I'm sitting at home, and I'm wishing I had gone. You know, I'm one of those alcoholic men, you know. Just, geez, I wish I had gone. And she comes back all fired up. All fired up for that. If you guys know my wife, she gets fired up. It's 10:30 at night. I'm not fired up, so now I'm fired up. You know, damn it, you woke me. Anyway, sorry about that. And she says the speaker rocked it. And I said, really? I said, oh, shoot. Well, that's good for him. You know, he rocked it. And she said she went up and met him after the meeting. And he was kind. He was considerate. You know, and gave her his card. You know, so I took that card, and she handed it to me, and I'm like, no, thank you. You don't need to make friends for me. You know, that's me. I'm an alcoholic dude. So then, but I kept the card, and I put it in my truck, and I left it there. And I left it there for until we moved back to Orchid the following in July 2015. And it stayed in my truck for about a year and a half, that card there. You know, and... my wife immediately got into Orchid Fellowship, and hey, everybody wants to meet you and everything. I said, geez, don't go. You don't need to make friends for me. Come on. You know, she goes, and that's the way she is. She goes out, and I didn't. I said, I'm fine. I'll go to my meetings at Royal Grandy. You know, Orchid's too small. Everybody knows about it. Everybody's going to be in my business. You know, oh, geez. Yeah, I'm still sick of 25 years back then. So then I have enough turmoil in my life, and I need to meet you. You know, and I go to the Tuesday night meeting, and I go to the Thursday night meeting, and one of the things about meetings in Orchid is we greet each other, and we welcome each other, and I got greeted there. You know, I met Victor on the Tuesday night meeting, I met Lee at the Tuesday night meeting, and, you know, I had wanted to talk to an old-timer on Thursday, and he had something I wanted. You know, he seemed to be structured. You know, and I wanted to ask some questions. You know, and I had been talking to Victor too as well. And he gave me his card after the meeting. And I put the card in my pocket and I got out to my truck. And so I get in my truck and I said, damn, that card looks familiar. And from the speaker meeting from Arizona, that card looks familiar. And so I pull the card out and I look at him and it's Lee C. Yeah. It's Lee. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, that's the miracle here we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's how my life has been in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, through the steps, all of them. You know, it's given me the life I've could never even dream of. You know, they tell you early in sobriety, write down what you want to have or what's your goals when you get sober. My goals, my cup is runneth over beyond. You know, my life today is so full. I thought at 25 years of sobriety, when I came back to Orchid, I was just going to put on the carpet slippers, be one of those old-timers and kind of hang back, you know, not be a bleeding deacon, Lord, no. And just, you know what, hey, yeah, right, do that, you know, be the director, and that didn't happen. I got four sponsees, and they keep me on my toes. And I love it because I need that. I need sponsees, and you sponsor. I have two bookends. In sobriety, two bookend friends, I say, because they are there no matter what. I have my brother Jeff in Fresno. Him and I, for the past 27 years, we've been through thick and thin. He's always been there for me. You know, he's picked me up. I'm bawling on my sponsor's couch in Visalia. He drives from Fresno to Visalia to pick me up because I got relationship problems, you know. I don't know if any of you can relate to that. But then I got my other book hand with Lee. You know, life has been good for me here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, everything good that I have in my life today is a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, bar none. Absolutely the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. You know, and if you're new, I encourage you to keep coming back. You know, it's here. It's right here for the taking. All you have to do is put your hand out, be a part of, you know, work the steps, and get to know us. We're going to help you out. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I love about how things that happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's kind of personal. But back in high school, I was that kid, that guy, you know, I wish I could go to that prom. I wish I could go to the homecoming dance. I wish I could do all that. You know, just that stand, you know, just never had that. I wish, you know. And a few years ago, probably about maybe 15, 20 years ago, you know, I'm there in the valley, and it's Friday Night Lights. You know, and there's it's a football stadium. It is lit up. And I'm sitting there. I have my daughter in my hand here, and I have my son in the hand. We're holding hands. And they have these Corvettes that drive out on the football field. You know, on these Corvettes, they have these ladies with long gowns, you know, and it's homecoming night. You know, and I'm sitting there with my daughter. You know, and the Corvette comes by, and my daughter goes, "Look, Daddy, there's Mommy." And she said, "You did marry the homecoming queen." You know, I'm Bob and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.
All right. All righty, one more round of applause for Bob. Thank you.